This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachowiak. President Trump has nominated Raleigh-based lawyer Thomas Farr as his pick for Eastern North Carolina District Court. Farr has a history of counseling North Carolina Republicans on a multiplicity of racially divisive issues, including voter ID and redistricting. Farr also represented former Senator Jesse Helms during the senator's racially charged 1984 campaign, and again in 1990 when Helms' so-called ballot security scheme was judged by the Justice Department as a violation of the Civil Rights Act. And there are now some questions about whether Farr was truthful in his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee about his role and knowledge of that scheme. Thomas Goldsmith is a former News and Observer editor and writer. He wrote a lengthy article about the Farr nomination for Indy Week, and he joins me now. Tommy, welcome. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here, Frank. Thank you.
All right, so tell us a little bit more about Thomas Farr and who he is.
Well, Thomas Farr is a Raleigh attorney who's been here since 1983 when he joined the firm of Tom Ellis, who had been a key advisor to Jesse Helms, speaking of Senator Helms, and has had a long career. A lot of it has been in employment and other areas of business, but for these purposes, he represented Senator Helms' campaign going forward from 1983 for a number of years. In the 2 years in question, there were postcard campaigns. The point of them, I think in some accounts it's been made to seem that the content of the postcards was racially charged. In fact, the content was viewed as having a discriminatory, not the content, but the mailing itself.
Yeah, take one
was
step
used.
Back. What postcards and to whom?
These postcards were sent by the Helms campaign to what the Justice Department found were largely African-American groups of voters. Many of them were returned, as letters sometimes are. In 84, we have a contemporary account that says the campaign paid 25 cents per postcard to have the postcard returned to the campaign rather than forwarded or simply discarded. That meant the campaign had an early database of people whose voting rights they could challenge at the polling place in 1984. And Mr. Farr, by his own account, was counsel to the campaign at that time. In 1990, which is the period in which his reliability in testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee has been questioned, there was a meeting in October of that year before the election. Farr, by almost every account, is there, although he hedged on that question in responding to Senator Cory Booker, who may wind up on Senate Judiciary, but is concerned about this nomination. Initially, in response to written questions from Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, he said, in answer to her question, did you provide any counsel or were you consulted in any way about the content or the decision to send those postcards? He said flatly, no. So, he says, I was not aware that the cards had been sent until they had been sent, et cetera. But what emerges from that meeting is Farr is there, a gentleman named Ed Locke, who apparently was the operative in 84 and 90. They talk about the postcards. And then in an older interview I did with him, he mentioned the 84 campaign in sending these postcards that were undeliverable. And in 1990, he talked to the assembled operatives there and said, yeah, it might not work because the law changed as it did in 1985 in response to the 84 campaign. I'm getting into the weeds here, so stop me if it's too much. But in 1990, he said, it wouldn't work on same-day challenges, but you might be able to challenge them after the election based on these returned postcards. At no time, according to any account I've heard, did he say, just don't do that
stuff.
Just don't
stuff. Do it. So let's talk a little bit, and we'll back up a little bit and go over this. In the first 84, we've got these postcards going out largely to African-American constituents. It is seen as an effort to repress the vote. However, I don't know, have the courts weighed in on this?
Not in 84, in 1990. Yeah.
The legislature did and said, okay, no more same-day challenges based on that kind of
a right. There was a statute, right, which Farr was certainly aware of because he references it in 1990. 1990.
1990, the postcards come up again. He said, oh, they changed the law on us. We better come up with something a little different. Here's what I think can work with these postcards, mm-hmm. and has a meeting and is on the record, as somebody's record, as having said all of that in the 1990
right.
campaign. Okay, then he's asked by the Senate Judiciary Committee, now considering the nomination of Farr to the Eastern District Court, Federal District Court, as Donald Trump's nominee, you know, what role did you play? He said, I didn't play any role.
I said, no, it's just a flat no. Mm-hmm. And it's all very lawyerly, and, you know, we're going into minutia of stuff that happened 27 and 31 years ago. The listeners can judge for themselves. As I wrote in this story with Erica Hellerstein, the scenario presented is that here's Mr. Farr, who's been a lawyer for a number of years and been involved with politics since 83, and Carter Wren, who has much longer involvement, and he's a person with whom I've had a cordial mm-hmm. business relationship.
Republican operative for many years.
Yes, and a nice guy. They both say, well, we knew about this. Farr says he didn't do anything to stop it. Carter Wren says, I had this postcard on my desk for days. I never looked at it. I finally said, just go ahead and send it. And is that a likely scenario? That would be up to your listeners and
right. Well, and ultimately, the Senate Judiciary Committee, do they weigh in on this sometime soon?
Well, it depends on what happens. His nomination was returned to the White House, which I think a vote of one senator or the wish of one senator can return nominees to the White House who did not get a hearing during their initial term of recommendation. So it's been sent back by President Trump. It has to go back through Senate Judiciary for a vote because it will have a different membership, Senator Franken having stepped down. They've yet to name the new member. There's some speculation it might be Cory Booker. It might be Kamala Harris from California. In many people's view, there should be an African-American member on the Senate Judiciary Committee. So when it comes back, it will get another vote. It will still be a majority Republican committee. There's every chance it could go through again. And then it will go to the full Senate where, again, there's a Republican majority. So I think there's, you know, barring some new revelation or more consideration of what we and others have presented, it could go forward. And it's an extremely important position, as you've noted.
Well, let's talk about this because this is the Eastern District of North Carolina. The seat has been open for a while. Barack Obama tried twice to fill it, and Richard Burr, the Republican senator from North Carolina, blocked it.
Exactly. There were two qualified African-American women. Their appointment would have been historic. They were both blocked. Interesting to me is the history of Farr's own nominations. He was twice nominated to the seat in 2006 and 2007. John Edwards at that time was a U.S. senator, speaking of a blast from the past. He blocked Farr's nomination. So it never he never went before a committee or anything. And I've recently learned, this will be perhaps new to your listeners as it was to me, I read all the way through Farr's CV that he presented to Senate Judiciary. And the last paragraph, he says, when I saw that Trump had been elected, I called Senator Tom Tillis and suggested that I might be a good candidate for that judgeship. So there was, as far as we know, not a great groundswell from elsewhere, but Mr. Farr did suggest himself for the judgeship.
Let's talk about the Eastern District of North Carolina. Where, you know, what is that? Demographically, what are we looking at in that district?
Well, it includes Raleigh. The federal courthouse in Raleigh is part of the Eastern District. It extends to the coast and roughly north and south of Raleigh. There are 44 counties, so approaching half of the counties in the state. Seven of the counties, as we noted in our piece, are contain the highest concentration of African-American population. So the district itself is heavily African-American. And if you put someone with Farr's associations, and, you know, we don't believe in guilt by association, mm-hmm. but he spent a long time working for Tom Ellis and for Jesse Helms, neither of whom is viewed as a paragon of advancing the cause of racial relations, I would not think. But the federal judge would oversee not only voting rights cases, but all sorts of kidnapping, of course, RICO violations, those kinds of things.
Well, marijuana convictions.
Marijuana convictions.
Because now we see that Jeff Sessions is going to actively and more aggressively pursue those, so they could end up in those courts.
Yes, and on appeal, I guess they could. There's already a federal marijuana law, which right. Obama elected not to enforce. Mm. But the judge has a lot of power. He would have power, again, over redistricting and voting rights sorts of cases in which he has played a role as an advocate for the General Assembly in laws that have been overturned by circuit courts and
as racially
Supreme
discriminatory.
Court.
So he was, again, an actor and a counsel to legislation that has been overturned.
The voting rights case is still under, I think there was a hearing on it yesterday, the voter ID case. That was the one where famously right. they said it was tailored with almost surgical precision to deny votes of African-American people. And that was a tremendously moving case. You remember they had the 94-year-old woman come in right. that had to give the preamble to vote.
Thomas Goldsmith, Raleigh reporter for Indy Week, longtime News and Observer editor and writer as well. A new story that explores Thomas Farr and his involvement with the Helms campaign and his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. You can find links to Tommy's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Coming up, what we're up against. We preview a new production about gender inequality in the workplace, and we'll do that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.